Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 13, Brian Freifelter. Brian is a street smart seller from the streets of Philadelphia, carrying peach crates around, selling CDs at the age of 15. I could just envision him talking about Tupac and all the music of the time. Well, he now is a very successful seller. And in this segment, he's going to talk about his leaving retail. He had two retail locations at one time, down to one, and actually leaves that in the next few weeks, and his move into warehouse. And the issues that he's had with warehousing and the mistakes that he's made. So I think there's going to be some real benefits for those of you thinking about it. So let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. And today I'm really excited to be talking with a very long-time seller, and my longest seller yet. That doesn't mean he's the oldest. He's just been selling the longest. And just a wealth of knowledge in eBay, Amazon, and retail. And I think that that's going to be something different for a lot of people to hear a little bit about retail. Brian Freifelter. Welcome, Brian.
Hello, Stephen.
And I'm just so glad to talk with you. Brian and I have hung out a few different times in a few different states and become friends, and I just really interested in Brian. I sit there and talk with him for hours and trying to understand the way he thinks and the business. I mean, it's just one of the smarter guys I've ever met. Brian, so let's before we jump into all that, let's just talk a little bit about yourself, maybe even how you got started and a little bit about your current life and how things are going.
Sure. I turned 32 on July 26th. I started when I was 15 years old. I pretty much, I loved music, bought music CDs on eBay, and, I realized quickly that if you buy them in bulk, you could buy them real cheap. You know, I was going to Best Buy, I was paying like $15 for a CD. I realized if you buy them in bulk, buy, say, 50 at a time for $100, you know, you get them for $2 each, and I started to flip them on eBay. I started to flip them in my neighborhood. I pretty much threw them into like peach boxes and I'd sell them for $5 each to my friends. I'd have people come to my house and buy them five each, five for 20. And, I kind of just ran with that for a while throughout high school. And, I made the mistake of, well, I went to college, which, feel like if you're an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily need it. But I pretty much dabbled on eBay throughout the years after that.
It's just so neat to imagine with the peach boxes. I mean, it's not any kind of box. It was a peach box.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could just see the kids coming, and hey, let me get that. See, that's just so cool. I mean, that's just so neat.
We were kind of like backpackers. Me and my buddy Julio would actually go to the Roosevelt Mall when we were teenagers, and we would try to sell them out of the peach boxes. And they, do you have that Tupac CD? What CD you got? And we'd be excited. We'd sell $100 worth of them, and we were pretty pumped about it.
Well, $100 as a kid—it's a lot of money, yeah. And especially something that you bought in bulk.
Yeah.
So that really—where did you get that skill set from? I mean, is that just ingrained in you? Did somebody teach you that?
I think when you want to make money, it just kind of comes naturally, and. At the time it was kind of a shortcut for me to be able to build up my CD collection and pay for it. And, it was just a way to make some side money. I wasn't looking to get rich at the time. I mean, it was more so just that I was, like I said, just trying to build my collection at the time.
And you were doing something you loved. And I think that there's our first nugget, right? Is there, your money will come if you do something you love. So, that's a great tip. And if you sell in a category you love, it really helps.
Sure. You have an advantage if there's something that you really know, if you know the niche, you're going to be, the best at it.
I've met some of those guys that sell vinyl at flea markets and things that just are like, record files. I don't know what they call them. These guys, it's just crazy the amount of knowledge they have, and they can talk about a record so in depth. You just meet those, and it's so fascinating.
The craziest guy I've ever met, his name is Steve. I met him out at a flea market in 2009. I've been friends with him since. He's the nuttiest person ever. He started hanging out at my store. I mean, he was influential on me starting a store at first. But I mean, he'll just go off on tangents. You'll pull out like a Jimi Hendrix record and he'll tell you stories about the 70s and like, you know, how great that record was and all these little, you know, little details and why it should sell for so much. And you're just like, wow, like, it's kind of cool, but like, I gotta get going. Like, you know, can we stop talking about this now?
You know, somebody said something today, and I said, I'm just a guy who loves talking about stuff, about selling stuff, you know, and I could talk for hours about this stuff. And what I don't want to ever happen is to make this become a job. You know, I don't want a job. I already have a job. Sure. And I'm always, you know, I love this part of the of our life, this business. Are you still in that place now?
You say where, you know, where I love doing what I do?
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't. There's plenty of stress that comes with this. But, I mean, you know, I love going out, finding things to sell. I enjoy, like, the fun of going on Facebook and talking with people. I enjoy, you know, when we have these conferences, meeting face-to-face and just talking strategy. So, yeah, it's fun for me.
And now you have you're selling on eBay. You're selling on Amazon. And are you doing merchant fulfilled on Amazon in addition to FBA?
A little bit. Under 20 items right now.
Oh, okay. So a little bit. Very little. And then you have one retail location or two?
Yeah, I had two at one point. We have the one right now, which is actually closing end of August. I think this is going to air, late August?
Actually, it'll be airing next week. So beginning of August.
Okay. I was going to say, it's closing, you know, end of August, so.
Okay, so in the end of August.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I do want to talk about that specifically because, you know, I think I hear people, okay, so I remember going to the toy fair maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I remember talking to Lego. I actually got in behind their walls, and if you've ever seen it, but they have these giant walls behind, and you have to make appointments, and they're very it's exclusive, and now it's almost impossible to get in due to demand. But they were, you know, do you have a brick and mortar? And that was the number one thing they asked you. First off, the margins weren't very good, but they wanted you to have a brick and mortar, or they were not selling to you because they want to kind of control their pricing and their, you know, their strategy, right? That's what they're trying to do. So I see a lot of people thinking that, hey, I'm going to open a brick and mortar and Lego is going to come to me and let me sell their stuff. And it's going to be easy because then I can just buy it from them and then I can go put it on Amazon for 8 times the price and nobody's going to care because all I have to do is have a brick and mortar and it's easy to have a brick and mortar. Is that your experience?
You know, I've never sold wholesale. I've never gone through the wholesale route or the new route really for the store. It's definitely an advantage. I wouldn't do it to get Lego. I mean, if you were already selling toys, I could see, you know, then approaching Lego or approaching these toy companies. I wouldn't just jump into it though. I mean, unless you can get cheap rent and you really are dedicated to, you know, having a brick and mortar store going. I wouldn't recommend really just, you know, if your Amazon business is successful, stick with that. Unless you're so successful and you have time to really spare, then you can look into it. Or unless, you know, some of these sources really require that you have brick and mortar, then you look into it. But, you know, it's not, you know, retail isn't the most glamorous thing in the world.
Well, I don't think a lot of people understand that and don't have experience with that. What hours are you open now, Brian?
We are open 11 to 6 every day. I personally haven't been in the store a while. I have an employee that runs it at this point. And, you know, I used to be in there. Pretty much I'm not in there at all at this point.
Well, you're phasing it out. But when you were in your heyday, what was that like? What was a typical week?
Typical week, you know, I was working 11 to 6 pretty much every day. I brought a buddy of mine to work with me eventually. And then I had weekends off, which didn't mean that I wasn't working. I was just working on other things. But I always had it, you know, open at least 7 hours a day. Our model was a lot different than, you know, the typical retail stores. Most people sell new things. We were selling used things. So it was a, you know, different type of store.
And your focus was movies, music, video games, right?
Yeah. When we started, I was doing flea markets for a while. I eventually said, hey, why don't I do this in a storefront where I don't have to worry so much about weather? And where I can buy things off people and, you know, resell that stuff. It was a way for me to source things. And it made a lot of sense for me at the time.
Really interesting. I think it's interesting to me that you're moving away from it, and it's not because you're failing or anything like that. You're just saying, hey, the better opportunity is over here. Is that the fair way to say that?
Yeah, pretty much. I could run it, and I could make good money at this point. The problem is, I had a buddy of mine who I brought some friends into the business, and I just couldn't get them paid enough. There wasn't enough money coming into the store, and, even with selling on Amazon, for us to really, make it work full time for them. I wanted to give them, jobs that they want, to keep that they can, brag about. So we changed the model eventually. If I did it myself, if I had, a cheap, $8 to $10 an hour employee, and it was just me and them working, we could probably do pretty well. But at this point, knowing what I know, there's just so much more opportunity out there that I figure it's not really worth, at least where my locations are right now, where my location is, it's not really worth keeping up with.
Will you move into a warehouse, or are you going to be able to work out of your house?
I'm in a warehouse right now. We eventually we transitioned into a warehouse in March. One of my mistakes this past year, in early 2014, I came up with a plan. I pretty much said, hey, we need to eventually get into a warehouse because we just can't, source. And we had no space where we were working at in my one store. I said, what we need to do is get a warehouse going. We can basically do all of our prep work, drop everything off there, get it shipped to Amazon that way. An opportunity came up for a business location about a mile away from where my original store was. And I figured, okay, let's move the main store over there. And then with the old store, we'll kind of treat it like a warehouse would be. So I pretty much had a 700 square foot store where about 100 square feet were made for like what I was doing on FBA. And I went from 100 square feet to maybe like 200 square feet. And it was pretty much a disaster. I mean, I'd go out shopping one night, I'd fill up the place, and I'd have to wait a day before I could go shopping again. So I got all the stuff out of there.
That's funny. So how big is the warehouse you're in now?
Warehouse is 1,800 square feet. My regret, it seemed like, we're pretty much already out of space. Since we're dealing more so, we still have media, although media isn't really what I'm so much doing on Amazon at this point. We still deal in it. I still have different channels that I sell it to or sell through. I could just use more space. We pretty much buy DVDs and CDs by the pallet. And it doesn't take many of them to, before you start running out of space, before you start taking all your buys and throwing it on top of the pallets. And you're like, crap, like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, I've seen the pictures, and you're not exaggerating. I've seen those giant trays of CDs, or massive trays.
Yeah.
and I could see what, they get buried very quickly, and then they're really not serving what you really wanted to do. That's interesting. And rent's not cheap where you are, right?
It's not too bad. I hear people in California that are like, man, like 1,000 square feet, warehouse is like 2,000 or 3,000 bucks. Where I'm at, I'm paying $900 for rent right now. And the utilities, it's $1,000, let's say. It's not too bad. I'm not like, in a rural area where you get like 20,000 square feet for a couple thousand, but it's not too bad where I'm at.
All right. That's really great. And the other piece of your business that fascinated me that you're going to be phasing out, but it still was interesting to me. I'm going to pull us into a break, but it was selling refurbished items where you guys would refurbish them. And I want to talk about that, but let's go to a break. And when we come back out, I want to walk me through how that came about. Okay.
Sounds good.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back in, we're going to talk about two things in this segment that I think are really worth paying attention to. One is Brian's training of a crew to do sourcing for him. He's basically retail ARB now, and he's been able to train people to go out and source for him. And I think there's some real information in there that will help you. Then we have the elephant in the room conversation about Brian being suspended from Amazon. What led him to get suspended, what he did about it, and then his reinstatement, and more importantly, the changes he's made in his business going forward, and how he's not heading back there again. And I think it's a very open, candid, honest kind of conversation that most people wouldn't have. Brian stepped up, and man, my admiration for this man just went up enormously based on this interview. Just candid, frank talk, and accepts responsibility for it. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back. And we're talking with Brian Feifelter. And when Brian was really in his heyday, one of the coolest things that I remember him telling me about, and then I got to see pictures, was when he was taking equipment and refurbishing it and repackaging it. And the comment I made to Brian earlier offline was that packaging that he was doing is amazingly professional. And it reminds me of refurbished equipment that I have bought. I have bought some refurbished equipment because it's a good deal and it's warranted or what have you. And it was just so cool to see. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that's what it looks like. I got to see behind the curtains. So walk us through, how did you get into that side of the business?
So when it comes to selling CDs and DVDs, for instance, you're never going to get them in perfect condition. I mean, if you really want something, you know, a quality item, you're going to have to clean it with a disc cleaning machine. So when I started my store, I had a disc cleaning machine, and I eventually learned, you know, through trial and error, which ones were the good ones. And we would clean the discs, change the cases, and we were selling. When I started my store, it was called $5 CD, and the whole concept was anything that was worth more than $5, I would put it on Amazon. Anything worth under $5, I'd pretty much put it in the store and sell it for $5 each. And I'd have penny items that I'd sell for $5, and you know, I'd sell $5 for $20, and I was happy because these are the items that really didn't make sense to sell on Amazon. And we would refurbish everything so that whether we were selling it on Amazon or to our customers, that they were getting a good quality product. And eventually what happened was we realized, hey, we're not always going to be able to sell, you know, cheap items like this. If we want to bring in more revenue, we need to kind of sell more expensive items. So we started getting into video games and video game consoles. And I brought my buddy in. My buddy Enrique is great with electronics. So we actually we brought him in to – we figured to fix cell phones at first. When we brought him in, he had never fixed a video game system. And he's just a whiz. I put a broken system in front of him. He figured it out real quick. He said, this is easier than cell phones because the parts are bigger on it. So from there, we just started buying systems. If they worked fine, you know, he'd just clean them up, box them up. If they had something wrong with them, he'd refurbish them. And, that was pretty much the process.
Yeah, the other thing we were talking about offline is in the market that I'm in, maybe about 5 miles from my house, is a liquidation auction company. And every other week they have these pallets of returns, and I believe they're almost all from Home Depot. But we're talking, they call it pallet wars, actually, is the way they advertise it. And it's giant pallets of returned merchandise, mostly to Home Depot, as I said. And you know, some is, you know, hey, I bought this or I got this as a gift and I'm returning it and the packaging is messed up or whatever. And I guess their policy is they just put it on this and sell it in liquidation. Or some of it is it's probably not working and I don't know what percentage. And there's a guy in town here who's been trying to convince me to go over. But I thought to myself, I don't want to be in, you know, buying junky stuff. But then I think about what you were doing and I wonder how many people are doing that, really buying it, refurbing it, and then repackaging it and selling it as refurbed. I just think that's a really neat model and really interesting.
It would
really
be
cool.
Interesting to see, especially with like power tools because they're so expensive. If you could buy them dirt cheap, I mean, yeah, you could probably make some serious profit off of fixing them and reselling them.
Well, you'll have to come over and take a look
at
that. It's just neat that you were able to do that. I think that's one of those experiences. A lot of the business for me is life experience. And to me, if I were you, I'd be checking that box off saying, did that, because that's pretty cool. So
yeah.
From my point of view, I think it's pretty cool. Now, you've had some real success. I mean, you had a great year last year, but you're really having a great year this year, other than an incident, which we will talk about. But you've really really have started to distance yourself. You've gotten past that point. I always call that point of stuck, you know, where people are selling $10,000 or $20,000 a month. You can't make a living at that. You know, you could sell it and be like, oh wow, I'm selling that much. Well, good luck. You know, based on the returns, based on the fees, you're not going to make a living. You have to get to some pretty good size levels. You're there now this year. How did you get there? What was the difference from the last 2 years? Where did you get better?
At this point, it's what I source. You know, before I was pretty much relying on people coming to me in my store, you know, I was buying used CDs, DVDs, video games, and I was using Craigslist. I was really good at sourcing Craigslist. The problem is I can only do so much that way. We've kind of switched our model to more of retail arbitrage, buying new items. And it's not that hard to scale. I mean, I started teaching a couple of my buddies recently how to do it, and I send them out to the stores now, and they come back. They make me proud at this point. I mean, they're doing a nice job. And I mean, we're like just touching the surface, you know, of what can be done. So I'm excited for the future and just, you know, being able to train them and, you know, hopefully be able to just increase our sales like crazy.
Well, fourth quarter is coming, and if you have guys and girls that are trained and ready to help, and you know, that's just a smart list. Andy Slamans had a group, you know, he gave them a list last year and some prepaid credit cards saying, all right, you go to this one, you go to this one, you go to this one, you go to this one. I just think that's so smart.
And
you're investing in the training now, which I think is even smarter.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I mean, you can cover a lot of ground by having, you know, multiple of you going out there.
So are you buying online through online arbitrage at all too?
Not much right now. I just don't have the time for it.
Okay.
I feel like the prices, you know, they tank a little easier than retail arbitrage. So I prefer just going out to stores and finding things that way.
Well, there's another tip. Okay, so let's just make sure we are clear why. When you buy online arbitrage, there is a delay in getting the product, right? Depending on who it is, sometimes I get stuff within the next couple days. But if I buy directly from Amazon, for example, sometimes it takes a few days to get here, 3 to 5 days. And some people are able to get certain items the next day. It doesn't seem to happen for me. And then if you order from Walmart or Kmart or Boscos or any of those companies, there is a real delay. And so you have to build that in and hope that the price you bought at was low enough to sustain the drop in the market for the delay of you getting the product, prepping the product, and sending it back in. Where in retail, you're literally picking it up, bringing it home that night, and if you're efficient, you can have it out the next morning. That's what you're talking about.
Sure, right? Sure. And then the other issue is I find Amazon is so competitive nowadays. I mean, they pretty much have, you know, just about anything that any of these other stores have in stock. So you have to, you know, you have to deal with them also and them possibly dropping the price, or their price might be low already. Now with online arbitrage, you know, you can definitely buy things off of, say, you know, eBay and flip it on Amazon or vice versa. There's a lot of opportunities out there, especially, I mean, you know, if you don't mind doing used or, I mean, even new, there's a lot of opportunity out there. I think if people, you know, focus on that and that's just their main thing they're focusing on, I'm sure there's a lot of money to be made. For right now, that's not my focus. So yeah.
What do you think, you know, so you're having a good year. You've clearly gotten your direction where you're comfortable with. You're closing some chapters in behind you. And what do you think your biggest strength as an entrepreneur? What really brings you forward?
I think I'm pretty quick with numbers. I'm pretty good at coming up with a plan at this point and, you know, telling my friend, you know, my guys around me, hey, this is the direction, this is what we need to do. And I'm disciplined enough to show up every day and, you know, just put in the time and the work.
Put in the time. I love that. Yeah. Put in the time.
So ambition plays into it.
What's your biggest weakness?
I guess I'm a softie. I'm a pretty nice guy. I mean, it's not hard to step on me.
That's funny. Okay, so I think we got to talk about it, right? So Brian sells in a category that is challenging, DVDs, music, CDs. Those things are challenging markets to sell in. Many, many, many people have stopped selling in those categories. And I still sell in those categories, just careful where we buy them from. So Brian has recently – well, I'll let you tell us the story. Walk us through exactly what happened.
So, well, before I go in and bash DVDs or CDs or anything used on Amazon, I guess I should point out I was suspended recently. I was in my warehouse just dropping some stuff off, checking my computer real quick. It was Sunday at 8 o'clock, July 19th. And I sign in. I see your account has been, you know, your selling privileges have been suspended. And I said, what happened? And you'd think it would be used. It was actually new items that that I got knocked for. Very minor offenses compared to feedbacks I've received in the past. Just because I've been selling used so long. I got suspended. I wasn't very happy about it. The things that they brought up, they basically gave me 4 ASINs. They gave me 3 complaints. They said, missing parts, items not as described or not as listed, I guess, under the wrong ASIN. And then I got a, used items being sold as new, which I don't really think that, I've been violating that much, but I got warned or that's what I got suspended for. I've sold at least 200,000 used CDs and DVDs on Amazon. I haven't had too much of an issue. I historically have a 98% feedback percentage. I carried a 98% feedback percentage through 2013. 2014, I got it up to 99%, which when you're selling used media, it's pretty impressive because there's just so many things that can go wrong, from the disc to the person being mad about the artwork, to just nonsense, people that order and just don't want the item, so they leave you a bad feedback. I'm at 100% right now, and I was pretty proud of it. I figured, wow, I'm better than ever. Amazon has to be loving me right now. And then I sign in and see I'm suspended. So It was kind of shocking at the time.
So I got stuck at the 200,000 CDs and DVDs. I mean, that's an unbelievable number to sell in only the last few years. I don't think people can appreciate that's a lot of product to move. So you get suspended. Were there warnings along the way?
All right. Last time I had been warned was 2013. I was warned late 2013. At the time, I was selling disc onlys of some CDs and DVDs. And what happened was a few people were complaining that they were counterfeits. And, I wrote to Seller Performance and said, I can assure you, I've been selling this stuff forever. I absolutely, value being, being a seller on Amazon. I wouldn't sell stuff like that. I said, what's going on is I've been selling more acceptable items recently. And the buyers must be misunderstanding that, that they bought the disc only. And I basically told Amazon, I'm not going to sell acceptable on Amazon anymore. And I literally moved that stuff off of there, and I eventually moved it to eBay. I pretty much wasn't warned again until July 2015. I got a counterfeit warning recently. Submitted the receipts, cleared it up. They said I was, fine to sell the item, which I actually, unlisted it and sent it back to me, just so I didn't have any more issues with that item. And then I get another warning the same week on it was a Nike Fuel Band. They said that the customer complained that it was in used condition. Now this item was sealed when I sent it in. Amazon received it as new. There wasn't a distributor damage on it. There wasn't anything that I knew of. It sold. The person received it. They apparently were unhappy with it. For all I know, it was used. I don't think it was, but for all I know, they just didn't want it, and that was their excuse. But I got hit for that, and then my account went into a review after that. And then a couple days later, I was suspended.
I think we've all gotten those notices. I'm getting a ton of pricing notices lately. Oh, my gosh, I'll get a zillion of them. And so, I guess the lesson is you got to take them serious, right? But I'm with you. Even new merchandise, I'm waiting for the day that an item I bought from Amazon directly comes in and they say, hey, this somebody's saying this isn't real. Well, I bought it from you. Yeah. You know, I mean, here's my receipt from you. You know, and I do agree with you that sellers, well, I see it more on eBay. Immediately, that's the first thing they do is they now know that they can open a case and they won't have to pay for their particular item. And that they think that that gets, you know, there's no recourse, or there's no repercussion for their decision. They don't understand what it does to you as a seller.
Yeah.
They just don't want to pay for it. If they would say to you, hey, look, I don't want to pay for this.
And, and I've had multiple conversations with sellers, and a lot of us think that really what Amazon should do is just offer free shipping back no matter what. That way we can eliminate a lot of the defective claims. If they can just say, hey, you know, I changed my mind. I didn't want it anymore. You know, I don't want it anymore. I'd be willing to pay shipping back. I mean, the cost of that shipping back is way less than the cost of a suspension, because that suspension cost me, you know, a lot of money. I was only down from Sunday until Saturday, but I'm making pretty good money at this point. That's a lot of money I lost. I would have paid way less, you know, in the shipping back. So if we can get the word out to Mr. B, you know, it would be a good thing.
Well, that's a good suggestion. You know, so when they're asking those questions, just keep pumping that out. That's really a good suggestion. So you're on the other side of it now. You're back in. You did have to go through the process of appealing and all the rest of that jazz. What are you doing differently today? You know, and you're not admitting that you did anything wrong, but what are you doing differently today? How's your business different today than it was 2 weeks ago?
You know, I'm not a perfect person. I have let a few things, you know, slip in here and there that, you know, they might have been somewhat questionable. We're just at this point, anything that gets scanned, it has to be exactly how it looks on the page. I mean, even if the box is different, you know, I don't want to take a chance that someone's going to complain about that, because, you know, I've already been warned about items not as described. So I just don't want to have to, you know, take a chance. I don't want to take a chance at this point on items like that. I've been more cautious this past week when it comes to my clothing and shoe buys. I had a complaint about shoes, which I admit I let a pair of shoes get through, which they were a little, you know, they had a little bit of dirt on the bottom. I shouldn't have let them get through, but I did get a feedback on that, saying, hey, you know, these are $100 shoes. They didn't come with the box. They came in a poly bag. It was the first time I'd gotten a complaint about it not coming in a box. And they were just like, you know, for me paying $100, I thought they would have been in better shape. And I think that might have been used against me in that suspension. So when I look at shoes now, you know, it's not that I won't buy them without the box. I've bought multiple pairs this week without a box. They need to be immaculate. I mean, there has to be no question at all that they're new. I mean, I still worry that someone's going to complain about the poly bag, which we know that Amazon will defend you on that one because they allow it. But I'm becoming more anal. I mean, clothing I'm buying now, it's like if I see too many wrinkles on it, I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't want to take a chance that someone's going to complain about this. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to make sure that packaging is pretty much perfect. You know, I just – anything that triggers a thought of, hey, you know, could someone complain about this, I'm trying to avoid at this point. I'm just trying to weed that stuff out. And like I said, I have 100% feedback. Over the past 365 days, I have two negatives and a neutral. I've sold 15,000 plus items in that time period. To only get, you know, only have three feedbacks that, you know, that stick as being negative or neutral, I think it's pretty good. I don't know really what more I can do to.
Well, because you don't know if they're real, right? You don't know if they're legitimately real. So you're taking here's what I would take away from this last little. Comment you had. It was basically, look, I'm taking away the ability for somebody to even second guess me selling not a sketchy item, but a less than perfect item. I'm completely taking that away by only selling perfect items.
Sure. And I mean, really, that's what we should be doing as Amazon sellers. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, Jeff Bezos won't be too happy with us if we're doing anything less. So I'm just trying to do whatever I can to make sure that, you know, I want to make the Amazon customer happy when it comes down to it. I don't want them to say anything bad. So yeah.
Well, and I think that's another thing to take away, right? So you're walking past a whole bunch of deals now for Amazon. Now, that doesn't mean you won't sell them on eBay or on your own website or whatever. because they allow used and that kind of thing, and you can really show pictures of the description. It really helps with that. But you're, for Amazon purposes, you're walking away from deals that you might have done in the past, and I think that's a really strong lesson. Don't get, oh, wow, I saw somebody talking about Legos. Somebody must have got a pallet of crushed Legos, and they're like, hey, can I sell these as new? No, they're crushed. The boxes are ruined. No, absolutely not. But they were asking whether it would be all right. And you got to learn to just say no and just walk past that stuff. As tempting as it is because the margins look so great, look what happens when you're closed for a week or two. Those margins are gone because you have no business left.
Yeah, it's not worth the risk. And the other thing is if the thought even crosses your mind to have to put anything in that comment field for a new item, you shouldn't be buying it or you shouldn't be listing it. I mean, put it on eBay if you have to. But when it comes down to it, there's only two things we put in that comment. I mean, we're either just putting that it's new or we're putting the expiration date. But there's no reason to put, like, packaging is dinged or, you know, this six-pack only has five in it. Like, or we throw in another flavor. Like, no, like, you're listing on the wrong listing if you're doing it like that. Like, don't do that. Like, it's new. Don't mess around with the listings.
And I'm sure that it wasn't some person that made the decision. I'm sure it's some algorithm somewhere that says, hey, if this happens, this happens, this happens, and they all fall in this threshold, boom, shut them down, let's review it. And I'm sure that's what happened for you. So I'm so glad that you're on the other side, and it sounds like you're smarter for it. I mean, you know.
I learned a lot. You know, I'm definitely disappointed to get suspended. I'm disappointed to miss out on those sales. You know, I do feel like, you know, my reputation, I guess, is somewhat tarnished because I look like, you know, an idiot seller now. But I learned a lot this week. I definitely learned, you know, a lot of new things that I'm going to be implementing. Definitely going to be more proactive when it comes to returns in the future. Definitely going to weed out, you know, anything that I don't think is in great shape. I'm probably not going to be listing stuff without invoices in the future either.
That's smart. They're really smart. Well, good for you. So that's all really good news. So we're just about to the end, right? I did want to ask you, are there any books or anything that inspires you that you think a listener could utilize to help grow their business?
You know, I love reading. I've been so busy recently that I haven't had a chance to really read too much. The best book I've read in the past year was Perry Marshall's Guide, The Definitive Guide to 80-20. It's kind of like Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week. It's just about, you know, focusing on what's working for you, you know, focusing on the 80% that's working for you, focusing on really what's working for you and weeding out things that really aren't working. That definitely, you know, changed a lot of my thoughts about things. That was a great book. Let me think. I'm going to give a shout out to Amir West with his Secrets of a Travel Ninja. I've gotten really into travel hacking and credit card maximization in the past, since 2014. Definitely check out his book for anyone that's doing retail arbitrage or any arbitrage. If you're using credit cards, you might as well be racking up points. And I mean, you might as well use them, whether it's for, you know, 2% cash back or whether it's to travel places, you know, for free flights or free hotels. No reason not to, and that book is a good starter for, you know, information on why, you know, how he got started, why he does it, and just, like, what he's capable of doing, you know, how he can basically fly anywhere for free or travel anywhere for free.
I saw somebody comment who's going to CES, and they said they just got their $14 ticket. That's how much their ticket to fly there is going to be because of exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, last year when I went to CES, and actually I didn't pay to fly there. I didn't pay for my hotel, so I was pretty happy about that.
So, and you know, that is the smart way to look at this, right? There is a revenue number, and everybody throws around revenue. Oh, this is it really, that's cool, but that's not really what you put in your pocket, and it really makes more sense to really manage what you put in your pocket more so, because lots of revenue is unprofitable and you don't want to chase it. So, Brian, we're looking for a meaningful process improvement, right? So the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward. And I think you've really given some amazing information. I think people really are going to sit back and soak it all in. But I'd like to have another idea from you of how people can just put something in place tomorrow to help them move forward.
The biggest thing that's really helped me, I realized in early 2014 that one of my biggest bottlenecks was I was spending too much time on little things. I used to be the one that would clean discs when it came to, you know, us refurbishing them. And, you know, you make your money from sourcing. So you don't want to be spending your time listing the stuff, packing the stuff, prepping it. So I realized then, you know, that I needed to come up with a plan to kind of pass it on to other people. So I pretty much have gotten people into place to handle the little things. If, you know, the biggest thing I think that holds people back is they say, oh, well, I'm too uncomfortable passing this work off to someone else. It's not that hard. I mean, you know, it takes a little bit of training, and then before you know it, you have someone working for you for, you know, anywhere from probably $8 to $15 an hour. And then that frees you up to go out and really make money, because none of us are going out and sourcing at $8 to $15 an hour. I mean, the average person I talk to sources probably $100 an hour. So why, you know, why do, you know, $10 an hour work when you can be out doing the $100 an hour work and you can have someone else doing, you know, the little things?
And I think that that's probably, they'd be happy at that, right? And that's their skill set. So I think that makes perfect sense.
Happy, you know, to make that.
Perfect. All right, Brian, how can our listeners get in touch with you or find out more about you?
I'm kind of a mysterious man. I don't have a website. I've had my store all this time. I don't have a website for it. I pretty much have a Facebook page where they can reach out to me and send me messages.
Okay.
Besides that, let me think. Yeah, Facebook's probably the best way right now.
Yeah, no problem. I'll have a link. I'm going to link those books because I think both of them are great books. I'm familiar with the one. And I'll put a link to your Facebook account so people, if they want to ask you questions, you're available to answer a question for somebody if they need some help.
Of course.
All right. Hey, Brian, I really appreciate you taking the time out, and I appreciate you talking through about some uncomfortable stuff, and I know how hard that is, but I don't think any less of you. I don't think you're tarnished in any way. I think you've manned up about it. You've said, hey, I made a mistake, and I'm moving past it. I think that's a big deal.
Well,
so
you pass that on to Amazon for me. And
yeah, I'm going to call Jeff right now. Hey, have a great night. Hey, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.